Imadagai Gimbai, Biripi Barai. That means welcome friends to Biripi country, and it is on behalf of the Biripi people, the custodians of this land, I would like to pay respect to the elders, both past and present, and extend that respect to each and every one listening to King's Kids.
Hello, I'm Heidi, and welcome to another edition of King's Kids with Aboriginal evangelist Tony Dennison. Christmas has special meaning for Tony because it was around Christmas time that he met Jesus in a powerful way. Here's Tony to tell us what happened.
Just over 30 years ago, in December, very close to Christmas, is when I got saved, when I found the Lord. But I want to take you back. It's good that Christians can remember what it was like before God changed their lives. Because I was in church recently and I heard my wife give a short testimony at communion. And it was so long ago, but to hear that testimony again after so many years of not hearing it, it just really defined who she was, how good God was and how God saved her from the life that she was living. And I want to take this opportunity to share with you what God really saved me from. Because sometimes it does us good to think back on what we used to be like before we got saved. And I want to go back to just over 30 years ago. I just got out of prison. I had no work and I had nowhere to go. So I finished up going back home to Moree. And while I was there, an old friend who I was in prison with, they used to call him Bomber. And they call him the Bomber for a reason, because he actually blew up one of the hotels with dynamite. He's a character. He's one of the old bush characters, that a real old legend of a man. To give you a bit of an insight into his background, when he was a little kid, he used to live with his granddad and they used to trap rabbits for a living. And as he got older, he became a very good fencer. In fact, he was probably one of the best fencers I've ever seen. He could put in miles and miles of fence, and you could stand at any end of the fence line and you could look right along it, and there would not one post would be out of place. And I worked with this bloke for many, many years and got involved with him in farming and that. And he gave me a job when I got out of prison. I've trusted this man many times. We worked in a lot of bush jobs together we did a lot of Aboriginal site surveying and stuff like that. And we often worked in dangerous places. When I started to hang around with Bomber and that, we used to get on the terps a bit. We used to drink a fair bit of alcohol. And we used to get up at 3 a.m. in the morning. You think about kids today, they're whinging about getting up at 7 o'clock to go to Macca's or to KFC, something like that. These kids today have no idea what it's like to have a real job. And I'm talking a real job. We used to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, winter or summer, and drive around, pick up men and get them out of bed and go to work. And we'd work from daylight till dark. In fact, this old fella Bomber used to say, he'd crack the whip and he'd say, you're a burning daylight. If you're standing there in the paddock and waiting for the sun to come up so you can start work, stick picking or fencing or stuff like that, he'd accuse you of burning daylight because you weren't doing something, even though it was dark. And I remember we used to be out stick picking, and we used to have a tractor and a trailer, and we'd pick up all the sticks out of the paddock after they cleared the land, and we'd pick it all up and put it on the trailer and we'd take it out to burn it. And I said to this old fella, I said, why are you putting it all over like in piles, 20 yards apart? And it was my first day on the job. He said, you'll find out tomorrow. And we turned up the next morning and it was still dark, and he walked around with a drum of diesel and he said, all these wood heaps on fire. He said, now you fellas get to work. You can see now all the fires that he lit, big bonfires, and he lit up the ground so you can start work before the daylight. People used to have a lunch break and sit down and have a coffee and that. We was too tired to have a coffee. I mean, all you wanted to do was lay down under a tree, have a quick sandwich and lay under a tree for an hour, because it was hard work. And we'd finish in the dark. And then we used to drink hard all night till 10, 11 o'clock, drinking whiskey and beer. And we was never short of a feed, because old Bomber always had a big stewing pot on the stove. And I learnt very early in the days never to ask him what was in it, because you never know what you was going to get, whether he was going to get pork chops, whether he was going to get beef, whether he was going to get lamb, lizards, kangaroo, snakes. He'd put everything in it. And if you didn't ask, you really enjoyed it. But if you asked, you'd never eat there again. He was a character. I mean, he's one of these bush legends. You know, he didn't trust banks. You know, well, I used to rob banks and we was good mates. He never trusted banks. And he used to have an old water tank at the back of his place. He had three or four carpet snakes. And one thing blackfellas are more frightened of are dogs and snakes. And he, old Bomber, used to put all his money in the tank. And he'd put snakes in that in the tank, like red-bellied blacks and brown snakes and carpet snakes. And he always knew that nobody was ever going to break in and take his money or take anything else that he had there that he didn't want people to take. But that was the lifestyle that I led before I got saved. Drinking, fighting, rowing, just being a scallywag. It all started to change for me because before that I didn't care about God. I didn't care about anybody else, just only cared about me. Being an outlaw was all I ever wanted to be, I guess. I never grew up from being a kid. I always played cowboys and Indians, robbing banks and robbing stagecoaches as a kid and playing all them cowboy games, and I just never grew out of it. And it all turned for me when I was walking down the street one day and this woman came up to me and she said, "Tony Dennison, God loves you. And I want you to know that God loves you and I love you too." I mean, I could stand in a bar and go toe-to-toe with anybody. I always carried guns. I had several guns. I had hand grenades. I had access to dynamite. I never used to leave the house without a Colt 45 in the back of my jeans, at least a Colt 45. I had another gun with a silencer, and I had shotguns and, you know, sawn-off shotguns, and I had a real supply of ammunition. People were afraid of me, and I guess now you hear these stories, they had plenty of good reason to be afraid of me. And I was afraid of no man or beast and very few women in my life, and this woman really frightened me because she came not at me to abuse me or to threaten me or to say anything, but she came and told me that God loved me, and that I wasn't ready for. You know, I talked about at different times, you know, I've known God or known about God all my life since I was little. And God never gave up, because different times when I was in prison, before I was a Christian, I told a story about how I met a man in prison, and his family spoke about God to me, spoke about God's love to me. And you know, it was just something that I never really gave God a thought. I never even thought, well, would God be interested in someone like me? Where was God when I was being interfered with as a kid? Where was God when, you know, I lived on the mission and went through all the heartache and the pain? And if God was God, why wasn't he there for me? Why didn't he show up before now? My life's fine. I'm okay. I take everything I want with a gun. I do what I like. I don't answer to nobody, not even to the police. I just do what Tony Dennison wants to do. And all of a sudden, God's taken an interest in me. Well, you know, he didn't just take an interest in me on that day, because the Bible tells me that God knew me when I was in my mother's womb. He knew me before I was in my mother's womb. And God knew that one day in 1982 that I was going to have an encounter with Jesus Christ that was going to change my life forever.
I walked many a night without a place to rest, not knowing where the north is or the east and west. Give me one star, just one simple. I'll never walk alone in at night. Many times it seemed that I would never find my way. Lose sight on being free and bondage I would stay. But give me one star, just one simple light. And I'll never walk alone again at night. So give me a star.
One star to
live
the mist and fog away.
Give me a star.
Give me one star to light the world in dark today.
One simple light.
Give me a star. Just one simple light.
Down,
I'll never walk alone.
see a new star rising in the sky. A star of joy, a star of purifying, a star of days of old,
days of old,
star of days,
days of old,
and a star
that's filled with gold,
and a star of
I didn't really want to change my life. When this woman told me that God loved me, I mean, I was pretty ticked off about it. And I told her in no uncertain terms to stop bothering me, not to come near me anymore. And, you know, every day she just turned up like a bad penny. She was there every day. Like, everybody in the town was afraid of me. I mean, I went for a driver's test for my license. And the copper wouldn't even get in the car with me. And back in them days, the police used to take you for your license. And he didn't even want to get in the car with me. Yeah, I made him get in the car. I got my license and stuff like that, and people were afraid of me. I used to go to pubs, and I'd even go into shops at different times, and I'd go to buy something, and they'd give me the stuff just to get rid of me. I mean, I used to catch taxis home, and they'd pay me when I got out. I didn't pay the taxi driver. They paid me when I got out of the taxi. That shows you that people were afraid of me. Everybody said they was my friend, but I didn't have any friends. People said they was friends because they was afraid of me. You know, even my own family, I even doubted at times whether they really loved me, because I wasn't even really interested in anybody except myself. But I always loved old mum and dad, you know, and I always wanted to do things for them. And I got involved with some drug growers and drug dealers, and they wanted me to work for them, and they gave me money in advance, and I spent it. And then they wanted me to kill the person that I was working for and stuff like that. And I thought my life was going okay, but it was out of control. My drinking was out of control. My gambling was out of control. My womanizing was out of control. Like everything else, I just, with women, I just took what I wanted. And most people just gave me what I wanted because they was afraid of me. And so this woman coming along and telling me that God loved me, it frightened the hell out of me. And then I met a girl from a church, and I didn't realize she was a church goer. Anyway, I met her at a funeral, one of my relatives' funerals. Started going out with her, and we just went out to coffee and dinner every now and again. And she was a really nice girl, but she was a church goer. And then she started in on me, telling me about God. And, you know, I was getting confused because I wanted to live the way I wanted to live for me. But what I was doing was living for the devil, not for myself. And he didn't really care too much about me either. You know, he just wanted to, all the devil wanted to do was make sure that I was bad and did what he wanted me to do. And if I ever looked like changing, all he wanted to do was take me out, send me to hell. But, you know, God had a different plan. See, God had a plan from the very beginning, because this woman who actually spoke to me told me that God loved me. She'd been praying for me for years. And I found out later on another man had prayed for me for 14 years to get saved. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes a long time for God to get through to you. And I remember going to a church. This woman said to me every day, she said, "I want you to know that God loves you." And I said to her, "What do I got to do to get you to stop telling me that God loves me?" She said, "If you come to church with me just once," she said, "I'll never tell you about God again." She lied to me. I went to church and she still kept telling me about God. But I remember, you know, you got to picture this in your mind. You know, here I am, a bad gangster, and I'm going to go to church for the first time. And I didn't want to let all my mates know, or, you know, or let anyone know that I was getting soft. You know, I wasn't going to tell Mum or Dad, but I got up early and I went down, and they didn't have church in a church this time. They had it in a little community hall, and it was right next to the bridge and the riverbank. And I remember getting down there about an hour before church started, and I thought I was talking to myself, but I was actually talking to God. And I was just walking up and down the riverbank talking to myself, and I just didn't know what, I didn't want to go in the church. I thought it was going to fall in if I went in there. And God has struck me with lightning bolt, and I kept talking to God, and I didn't want to take a gun in the church. I thought, geez, that'd be even too much for me, or an hand grenade. So I looked for a place to plant them, and I was going to hide them under a thing, and I did hide them near the church. I didn't hide them too far away from the church because in case I needed them. Anyway, so I goes in the church, and I'm sitting in the back. I thought, well, you know, they wouldn't want me up the front, so I sat up the back, and I thought nobody would notice me there. And this guy gets up and he preaches a sermon about God's love. And, you know, it really hit home. And I realized for the first time that nobody really ever loved me. I didn't feel loved. I knew nobody loved me. Nobody cared about me, except maybe Mum and Dad and the family, but the immediate family. But I just felt that for the first time in my life, I felt really alone, knowing that nobody loved me. And after the church service, me and I had tears welling up in my eyes, and I got out of there. And this lady said to me, "You know, we're having a big church crusade on the weekend." And she said, "What was you doing in jail?" I said, "I used to cook in jail." She said, "Well, if we buy the ingredients, would you cook some apple pies and stuff like that for the church?" And I said, "I'll do it on one condition: you don't tell anybody, because, you know, I've got a reputation to uphold." And I started from scratch, and I made these, like, I peeled the apples and done everything, and made these apple pies for about 300 people. Anyway, and I thought, well, I'm here now, I might as well sit in on a couple of the sermons. It was a big old-fashioned tent meeting, like an old circus tent. And so I sort of sat at the back of the tent meeting, and they asked people, did they want to give their hearts to God, and or did they want to get baptized? And I just got caught up in the emotion of feeling good in church and that. That the next thing I knew, I was standing in the river being baptized. But I didn't understand it, and I didn't really make a commitment to God. I think they was just baptizing people as they went out. I just find myself walking forward, and I wanted God, but I couldn't really have God because of the lifestyle that I was living. And I didn't think God, in his wisdom, could take me in and change me, or even would he even want me. And I said to God, I said, well, okay. I went in and I got baptized. When I got up the next morning at home, my dad came in the room in front of me. He said, I heard you got baptized down the river yesterday. I said, yeah, but it didn't mean nothing. He said, well, why did you do it? He said, me and Mum, you know, he said, we want to see you change your life, he said. And we was excited when someone come to the house and told us that you got baptized down the river yesterday. Well, I said, oh, yeah, that God stuff's okay for people, you know, but it's not really for me. He said, well, why did you do it, son? I said, well, because it was, I don't know, I just did it. I said, get off me case. Leave me alone. And I remember at the time that I said to God, I said, I really need to do something. But I was working with these people, I'd taken money off them, I'd spent it, and I said I'd kill somebody for them, and I really liked him. He was a funny little chap, he was an Italian, he had 7 or 8 kids, and about the day before I was going to kill him, already made me mind up to do it, and when I was going to do it. And then anyway, I ran into him in the street, and he started introducing me to all these little snot rags he had, all these little tin lids, ankle biters. And I thought, well, you know, if I go ahead and kill this bloke, I said, well, you know, what's going to happen to these kids? And, you know, prior to going to that church and this woman telling me God loved me, I would have had no hesitation in killing him. I would have done him just like that. Anyway, so I decided, well, God, I said, you know, I started talking to God even before I got saved. You know, I didn't realize I was talking to God in the sense that I was saying to God, well, you know, I'm going to do an armed robbery. And if everything goes okay, I'm going to pay back this money that I've taken off these people. I'm going to make them an offer they can't refuse. And then I'll think about giving my heart to you. And you know, how stupid was that? Thinking that I could make a deal with God, let me do an armed robbery and everything will be fine. And I said to God, okay, I had to recruit someone to do the job with me. And so I did. I recruited my cousin. And we went out and stole a car the night before, and we had all these plans. And I said to this fella, I said, make sure you're up early tomorrow morning. Make sure you got your gun, your mask, and everything else we need to do the job. And I remember getting up real early in the morning, and I went and picked up the stolen car, because once you steal a car, you have to hide it somewhere, and then you need to get it to go and do the job. And so I went and picked up the car, and we parked it down near a no-go zone for the police, because it was like the Bronx, you know, they wouldn't go there. You know, you wouldn't get a policeman to go down there after dark, because they were terrified of the black fellas in those areas. And so I parked the car down there. My biggest fear was that other black kids would have stole the car before I got to use it. So we goes down there, and I gets the car, and I goes and gets this guy, and I gets to his house, and he's sound asleep. He's in bed. So I had to break into the house without waking anybody else up, and I had to get a hold of him. And then when we got out to the car and we got started driving, we was about half an hour down the road, and I said to him, mate, I said, where's your gun and where's your mask? He said, oh, I left it at home. I forgot about it. I mean, I was going to cancel the whole deal, and I was just so mad with him. But when we got to the job, we couldn't find a car park because it was Christmas. And so I finished up taking a stolen car and parking it in the police station car park, and then walking down to the bank. I don't know what I thought I was. Who I must have thought I was, John Wayne. I must have thought I was in one of them movies or something. Just, he goes and parks a stolen car in a police station car park, and then just casually walks down the street to rob a bank. Anyway, so we gets down there, and we had a little bit of time to kill, and I said to the guy, you watch the back of the bank, and I'll go around the front, and when you give me the single, I said, I'll come in and we'll get the payroll. I always had a golden rule, never work with people that use marijuana or use drugs, and especially blokes, you tell women what they're doing. But he broke all the rules. He told his wife that we was coming to have a good Christmas because we were going to rob a bank, and then he was using drugs and got the munchies and walked off to get something to eat. And when the payroll was there, we missed it because he wasn't there to give me the single. Me and I was ticked. I could have killed him. We missed the payroll. We goes back to the police station, get my car. Well, not my car. I borrowed it. Well, I stole it. Let's be honest, I stole it. Anyway, so we gets in the car. We goes down to the river. And this guy blurts out and tells me, he said, look, he said, I can't tell you enough, he said, that how sorry I am. I said, well, sorry doesn't cut it. And I said, well, just get in the car. We'll do it again next week or next payday. We'll do it before Christmas. He said, we can't go home empty-handed. He said, I told the wife that we're going to have money for Christmas. Man, that's when I really wanted to kill him. And if it wasn't my uncle's son, I would have killed him.
What an amazing story Tony has. But that's all we have time for this week. Next week, Tony continues of how God got hold of him after a robbery followed by a shootout with police and how God rescued Tony from certain death. In the meantime, remember that Christmas is about Jesus and the family. So here at King's Kids, we'd like you to make sure that you don't get so tied up in the last minute shopping and the busyness of the season that you forget about whose birthday it is. Let's put Jesus first this Christmas. I'm Heidi. This has been King's Kids. See you next week.